BBC Radio Berkshire.
You were listening to the show back in May when we featured the stories of young people who'd grown up in the care system in Berkshire and just teased out some of the issues of what it's like to be a social worker or a foster parent, or perhaps most importantly, one of these young people who told us their stories were never told, they were never really listened to when they'd been taken away from their parents, split up from their siblings and either fostered or put in a children's home. We put some of the issues that came out of the project to the Children's Minister, Tim Lawton, but we thought it might be good if I took a group of the young people we'd got to know to Westminster to meet the Children's Minister, Tim Lawton, in person and put their concerns to him face-to-face. So we did this last week, and I took Priya and Christy and, first of all, Samina to the Department of Education just next to Westminster Abbey to meet the Minister. This is what happened. Samina is from Reading. You might remember Samina's story if you heard Handle With Care. What do you want to ask Tim, Samina?
I'd just like to know what's coming up for the children that will be going into care or growing up to leave care. Just want to see what they have to go experience and what they have to go through.
Well, we've got, at the moment, an increasing number of children and young people come into the care system, which is putting a lot of pressure on the system. And one of the things, and I think I said it in the interview before, that I've been appalled about is the big gap in achievement between kids who are in the care system and those kids who are lucky enough to be with their birth families. It's in terms of education qualifications, health outcomes, homelessness, teenage pregnancies, and everything else. So we've been doing quite a wide range of things in the last year. We need kids to catch up at school. So every child in the care system will qualify for the pupil premium in schools, which is extra money to give extra support to help those people catch up. Children in the care system get extra help if they're able to get on to university, extra help when they are leaving care to set up their own homes. And we're working on some extra advantages we can give to young people in the care system. On health, for example, I know that mental health is a big problem for kids in the care system, much more affected by it, quite understandably, being some of the many traumatic experiences they might have been through. So the Department of Health, my colleagues there, produced a new policy paper around mental health with a particular section of it just around mental health for children in the care system, how we get much smarter at identifying it and delivering it earlier. So there's a whole raft of things going on across the system for children in the care system to get them a better deal. And I produced the Foster Carers Charter earlier in the year, which is a real sort of new deal for kids in care to make sure that the foster carers looking after them and the kids themselves can say to local authorities, this is what I signed up for, this is what my young person needs, and make sure they get it.
What do you make of that, Samina? Are you impressed? Do you think, oh yeah, that sounds like young people growing up now will get a better experience of care than some of the people we spoke to?
Definitely, because my main priority is my sister, because she's suffering from autism. And as I was in the children's home, I did live with a few young people who were autistic, and they were a lot older than me. So I basically saw that as like a mirror, seeing, right, is that going to be my sister in the next few years' time? So I wanted to know what was coming in to see what could help my sister. But yeah, it sounds very promising.
Let me ask Priya, you've got a question. You're a bit more worried about the future, aren't you? Because you're worried about government cuts that are being made.
Yeah, with EMA, I struggled going to sixth form with just living on EMA, because where I lived, I had to provide, I had to use public transport, which cost me more than the EMA supplied me. And then I had to provide, like, get books and everything to go to college and go to sixth form. So with the cuts, how is that going to work?
Well, on EMA, for example, there's another case where we've made young people in the care system a special priority. Now, we had to change the EMA system. It was a very expensive scheme. Finances are really tight at the moment. It was costing well over £500 million a year. And what our research showed is actually the majority of young people who got EMA, it didn't make the difference between whether they can stay on in education or not. And that was the point of EMA, to make sure that young people stayed on in education and got the qualifications they're able to achieve, and they weren't held back because of financial constraints. So we've come up with a new system, which is obviously a small amount of money, but it's got far more flexibility on it, and it's down to local colleges to determine who needs to have that money and to assess their needs. And it may mean for some people getting more than the £30 that it was capped at before, particularly if you've got big transport costs or something like that. And again, young people in the care system will be at the front of the queue for qualifying for that, ahead of many others who can afford to stay on in education anyway. But it's a really good point, because we don't want anybody to be held back from fulfilling their potential education, particularly not young people in care who are so held back anyway by financial constraint.
What do you think, Priya? I mean, for young people like yourself in Slough, do you think EMA made a big difference as to whether you could afford to stay in education or not? Because what you're hearing is that it doesn't make that much difference.
EMA to me made a huge difference, and it still wasn't enough because of the lack of EMA, and sometimes you didn't get it if you didn't make registration. Because of that, my attendance is so low for sixth form. I was fortunate to get the grades that I got and to go to uni, but I think EMA does make a big difference, and I think that if it's up to colleges, I would really like to see what they do, because my college was not very helpful at all in helping public transport or helping pay for books, which made me obviously not go to college that often, and to my attendance to be decreased.
You can see, Minister, that the Priya's emotional talking about this,
yeah,
isn't she?
And for Priya and other people in her position, it is a big deal. It is very important, which is why we're not completely doing away with the system and not replacing it or something. We're placing it on replacing it with a much more targeted system, where clearly it would make a difference between your ability to stay on education or not. Now, before, the colleges didn't have this money, they didn't have control of this money. Now that they will, and we think that they're in the best place to judge who needs it and what they need in order for them to be able to turn up at college, make sure they've got the books and the equipment that that they need, and so on. Now, if it's not working, we want to hear about it, because we recognise there is a need. But for many people, actually, it was a bit of a bonus rather than essential to them being able to actually get to school. But one of my big bugbears is, on average, about 6 or 7% of young people in care get to university. Something around 40% plus of young people generally get to university. That is a scandal. But there are certain parts of the country they do a lot better. You go to somewhere like Ealing, they've got a really good facility in Ealing. It's called the Horizon Centre, which I opened about 4 years ago, which is a drop-in centre for anybody in the care system in Ealing to come and get some more education, run by many kids who were in care in Ealing, went off to university, have come back. 18% of young people in care in Ealing go to university. That's a huge improvement against other parts of the country. What are they doing well there, and why isn't that happening all over the place? And I want to make sure those sort of experiences are more widely shared.
Christy, what do you want to ask, Tim?
I'd just like to know, with me growing up, it was a constant battle with social services to listen to my views. And I grew up with an alcoholic mother, and they constantly put me in with her, took me out, and they were always focusing on keeping me with the family, or like family views, it was all important. But I find that young people really aren't listened to by social services, and just like to know what are the future plans on listening to young people and any services that could be available.
Really important point. And I have set up 4 groups of young people who come and see me every quarter. I've got a group of kids who are in foster care now. I've got a group who have recently left care. In fact, they're coming to see me tomorrow. I've got a group of kids who have been adopted. And I've got another group of kids who are in residential children's homes. They come and see me and tell me what's going right, what's going wrong. I have to say, they don't hold back. And I get some of my best information and intelligence from them. And a common complaint is, one, they get shifted from pillar to post. Yeah. The social workers are always changing. So even if you do get to talk to your social worker, then next month you find you're dealing with somebody else. That has got to change. And we're doing a lot of work through the Munro Review about how we can overhaul the whole social work and child protection system, so that social workers are spending more of their time face-to-face with the young people they need to help, rather than in front of a computer filling in forms and complying with all sorts of processes that don't actually help you. In terms of a voice, there's a really important network of children in care councils, and we've now got a children in care council in every area of the country, except for the Isles of Scilly, because apparently there aren't any children in care in the Scilly Isles, but it's covering the whole country, where it's made up of local people who are in care, who have got a direct line into their local authority, people responsible for the social workers, telling them what works and what doesn't work. I see a lot of them on a regular basis. They report to me, so I can then make a heavy phone call to the Director of Children's Services in a certain area if clearly something is going wrong. So I want every person in care to establish a link with their children in care councils, perhaps become a member of one, go along to their meetings, so you can make sure your experience is out there, and then they can make representations to the local social workers to make sure you're getting listened to and you're getting a better deal. And it's really important we use those.
Yeah. Well, it's not so much of a problem for me now, because obviously I'm growing up and I can talk to other people. But, yeah, I think that's really good, because it is a problem. I went for about 20 social workers.
And you need, if you haven't got your family to fall back on for whatever reason, you need to have a trusted adult who's got your interests at heart, who you have confidence is looking out for you, who is there when you need something for advice, some extra support, if crisis happen or whatever. There's also independent reviewing officers who every young person in care has, and they're there to advocate for you. If, again, you're not getting properly looked after by the local authority, they're the people to see who will go and knock on the door of the local authority and say, we need to do better for that person.
Can we just pick up on social workers? When we spoke in May, I think you actually said social work was in some kind of crisis. You mentioned the review that's going on. What have you done about it since then?
Well, the Professor Ali Munro did this fantastic report, and she reported back in May and came up with some quite radical proposals about how we don't just tinker with the system, that we turn it upside down effectively. I then, rather than just do a knee-jerk reaction, said, that's great, we'll do all of that, as usually happens, and then it doesn't happen. I got together a group of experts, lots of people from health, from education, some head teachers, some social workers themselves, to work out how we could turn her recommendations into reality, and I've accepted the vast majority of her report. And
so what's going to happen to stop someone like Christy having, you know, a new social worker every 10 days and, you know, having to have someone new to get to know all the time?
Well, it's a number of things, and it's a jigsaw puzzle, because one, we need more social workers coming into the profession, but they've got to be good. And in the past, we've recruited a lot of people into social work who actually have not been up to the job. They've got a social work degree because it's been an easier degree course to get onto, and actually then they drop out soon after. So
awesome, we, nodding and smiling going on around the table here.
So we're raising their game, and actually you will need to have a much more rigorous training to become a social worker, particularly in children in the future. But of course, it takes a few years to get those people in and train them, but we've actually got now more better calibre people coming forward. That's one. Secondly, we've got to make sure the good social workers we have got stay, and that we use them to the best effect. So some of the changes we are already making is to do away with a lot of the bureaucracy and paperwork, so that they don't have to fill in loads of forms and comply with all sorts of regulations now. They can spend more of that time, not in front of the computer, but actually out seeing our young people in the care system, working on child protection issues, and doing the job of being a social worker, which is what people went into social work to do. And we've turned them into computer operatives in many, many cases. So we've already made those changes. Many local authorities are already changing their systems. We're going to appoint a chief social worker, which is very important, because it needs to have a strong public voice of somebody standing up for the importance of social work, who can be the public face to explain, because a lot of people have a very dim view of social workers. Actually, they do a really essential job. And if they were appreciated more, valued more, of higher calibre, they would stay around longer. And then rather than having 20 different social workers, hopefully you would have a much lower turnover and you'd be able to establish a much better relationship and have more confidence in them, and that's good for everybody. It's going to take some time to get there, but we've already changed some of the systems and the demands on social workers, so we can start to achieve that.
This retention thing, I mean, you list some of the reasons why retaining social workers are difficult, but actually what social workers told us in this project is the reason they don't stay in the job is it's too difficult because they have too many cases. There need to be more of them.
Well, they have, whether they have too many cases
that's what they say,
or not, in some places they'll have a higher caseload than others and handle it better. The trouble is there's too much bureaucracy concerned with each case. And so if we took away a lot of the requirements to fill in all sorts of forms, I mean, something called the Integrated Children's System, ICS, which the last government brought in, which requires effectively 50 pages of forms for every single child that you're dealing with. Well, that's nonsense. So we've slimmed that down enormously. So if we're spending less time doing the paperwork, then it'll be easier for the social workers to cope with their existing caseload.
So you don't think there's any need for more social workers?
We do. There is certainly a need for more social workers because we've got huge vacancies in some areas and they're having to use temps and agency workers. I want more social workers who are directly employed or directly attached to local authorities, who are there for the long term, who can establish and maintain that close, empathetic relationship with the families that they are looking after. But I want the right type of social workers who know what they're doing, they're there for the right reasons, and understand young people. Actually, we've got too many social workers who don't really understand children and young people, and that's the essential part of the job, I would have thought.
Anyone that had that experience, a social worker who didn't understand them?
Yeah.
Go on, Christy.
I don't understand how you're going to make sure that you get social workers who do understand young people.
Well, I'll tell you one thing that I'm really pushing at the moment is that as part of their training courses, they should be interviewed by Children in Care. As part of the recruitment exercise in local authorities, and it's happening in certain places, that young people in the care system should be on interview panels for those social workers. And if they can't cope with those young people in interview, then I'm not sure they're going to cope with them when they're dealing with them in real life if they get the job. You know, young people who've been in the care system for a long time are pretty savvy about what works and what doesn't work and the sort of person they need to be able to deal with. So it strikes me as not rocket science that they should have some part in the recruitment. And I know a lot of young people in the care system are up for that and would like that challenge.
A lot of councils already do it, actually, don't they? So this sounds like a great idea, but actually it already happens.
Some. And in some cases at token exercise, some don't do it at all and pay lip service to it. I want everybody to do it as a matter of course.
Anyone got a question about paperwork? Because one thing that really came out of the project was that, you know, as a young person growing up in care, what you have is a form to fill in if you want to wear a pair of odd socks, if you want to have your hair cut, if you want to go to a sleepover. And it, to the extent that a lot of these things just can't happen for a young person in care because of the bureaucracy involved. Now, last time we spoke, Tim, you said this was all a myth.
Yeah, and it is. We're still getting those reports.
You're in charge.
But I don't deliver the services to children at the sharp end. I'm not the social worker to 64,000 children in care. My job is to make sure that social workers are doing their job properly. Now, I issued new guidance back in April that made it absolutely crystal clear, and I bang on about it till I'm blue in the face, that children in foster care should be looked after by their foster parents in no different way to as if they're their own children, unless there are particular circumstances and that's set out in the care placement plan at the outset. So on that basis, there is no reason why any child in care should not be able to go on a sleepover if their foster parents think it's suitable for them, to be able to go on the family holiday if their foster parents think it's suitable for them, to go and have a haircut if they need a haircut. You do not need to have a form filled in by a social worker in triplicate to do those everyday things.
Do you think everyone's got that message now?
They haven't got that message now, and I will continue banging on about it, which is why this programme and lots of others going on need to get that message across. But I still have people writing to me. I have the Tell Tim website where people can directly emailing telling me that they're being told this by their social worker, and my reply is it's rubbish, it's a myth, there are no regulations that make that necessary. Go back and tell the local authority that is the case and that Tim Lawton, the minister, said so. And if they don't agree, then I want their number and I'll speak to them. It's a myth and we've got to bust it. But, you know, myths take a lot of busting, but we'll keep going at it.
Did you guys have this sort of experience that you couldn't do things because of the rules? Samina?
Yeah, I did. For example, when I first got into care, I wanted to go to a party and I wanted to sleep over. But the fact that they had to go and look at the parents and then go into the house, and it was just the fact that, like you said, it was a myth. It really is all a myth. But the fact that you won't plan your 13th birthday party 6 months in advance, would you? Because it sounded like that's what I needed to let to get the permission and that, which is absolutely mind-boggling.
So therefore it just doesn't happen. You don't have a party because it's too difficult.
Exactly, and I just ended up going there and then coming back home and getting them all the parents checked out on that. But just giving them, like, for example, the norm is you just organise a party a few weeks in advance, maybe a week in advance, but being in a children's home, it sounded like I needed about 6 months' notice. It was frustrating in a way because I didn't feel like that was the norm. I just wanted, like, a perfect, well, not exactly perfect, but, like, a normal childhood, just growing up, becoming a teenager, becoming independent.
That's what everyone wants, isn't it? That's what young people who are looked after want. They want to feel normal.
That's exactly it. Look, young people who, through no fault of their own, end up in the care system, need stability and to be treated like an ordinary, normal child, young person, and they need to have a normal relationship with the people looking after them. Putting all these sorts of barriers in their place completely undermine that, which is why, if there were any barriers there, we have got rid of them. And people responsible for making decisions need to get that message loud and clear, and for goodness sake, let's give young people in care a break and allow them to get on with their lives as we would any other young person who's lucky enough to live with their own parents.
Another issue that came out of our programmes was that you're very carefully protected while you're growing up in care, and then you reach your 18th birthday and suddenly you're on your own and there's no help and support. All that machinery around you that you have been used to growing up suddenly disappears, doesn't it? So what about this issue that as soon as you become an adult, all your support network is stripped away from you?
And it's a big problem, and it's not just going to uni. Some people leave care when they're 16 and then have to fend for themselves as an adult. Now, the average age of kids living with their families leaving home is now something like 24 and getting old, and yet we expect kids in the care system, who can be some of the more vulnerable young people, to leave home and fend for themselves earlier. Some of them may be up to it or think they're up to it, and then it all goes pear-shaped. Others aren't. Now, that's why we've been running some pilots called the Staying Put scheme, where we've been trialling young people being able to keep in care beyond their 18th birthdays. There are also some authorities who are much more proactive on this, where they will keep a foster placement open for young people who are at university. So during the university vac or whatever, then you can come back and retain that relationship. And I think we need much more flexibility in the system. For some people, will want to go out and do their own thing, but then things all fall to pieces. They might lose their job, they flunk college and fall out of school, or whatever it might be. So we need the flexibility so that they've got that safety net of the foster care or somebody who's looked out for them before, to be able to come back and get that support until they are able to go solo again. So we're looking at the ways the Staying Put pilots have worked, and we're going to try and replicate the strong points as widely around the country as possible.
We brought you a gift. We wouldn't have come without a gift, would we? One of the aspects of the project that we did was creative writing, was enabling people who grow up in the care system to talk about their experience, because no one ever listened to them, by writing it down, sometimes as a poem, that kind of thing. So what we've got for you is a little framed version of three of the poems that came out of the project, which is a bit trapped in the bag, there we go, which we'd like you to hang on your wall.
Right.
I'm going to read one of the poems to you. This was a sort of group effort, a lot of the young people who took part in the project. So it's called This Is Who We Are, and it's written by children in Berkshire who grew up in the care system. We love being together with friends. We love freedom of speech and sunshine and social workers who are punctual and parties and people who know how to listen. We love being trusted at twilight. We love comic films and cool trips, horses and high wire activities, bouldering and bowling. We also love vouchers, by the way. We love music and manga drawings, jokes and justice when used the right way, art and animals and all these things, but we hate broken promises. Mm-hmm. And we thought you might like to have that.
Very good.
Where's it going to hang?
I don't know. We're going to find something, because the trouble is, most of my office is glass. This is quite heavy. We'll find
a wall over here, just right by the desk.
We can put it by the desk. It won't show up very well, though. Let's try and find a more prominent place for it.
On the way really here, they're too polite to say it, but there's a bit of cynicism among the young people we've been speaking to today, and among the young people who took part in the project, that guys like yourself say stuff, kind of feel like you know what the issues are, make promises, but don't keep them.
Well, I've been in this job for 17 months, and in the space of those 17 months, for young people in the care system, we have done more than just about any other group of people, I think, in this department. We issued new guidance, doing all the sorts of things. That is reality now. That's there to bust the myth. That's there to tell every local authority they need to do better for children in need care system. I've got children in care councils in every single authority. They're there now with a strong voice. I've got groups of young people in care coming to tell me, give them the problems firsthand. I've set up a Tell Tim website where every young person in the care system in the whole country can email me directly with their comments on what's going well, what's not going well. So I think we have done a lot, and I hope that's beginning to get recognised, but I don't underestimate the challenge of what we've still got to do, and I'm absolutely determined to see it through.
Last word to the young people who've come to see the minister. Are you impressed, Christy?
Yeah, I'm quite impressed, actually. I'm not conservative, but yeah, I'm quite impressed.
That doesn't matter. Well, it doesn't matter, but, you know, it's not the relevant point.
What do you think, Samina?
Yeah, just can't wait to see what the changes are, and hopefully everything will be positive.
Priya?
Yeah, I can't wait to see it all follow through.
Priya? And Christy and Samina, thanks to them. Thanks to Children's Minister Tim Lawton for having us at the Department of Education to answer our questions last week as part of our Handle with Care project on BBC Radio Berkshire.